Hello, I'm Matthew, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 5th of August, 2026.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD. Simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Reading for you this week, we have me, Matthew, Angela, Muhammad, Helen, Mina, Peter, Simon, and of course not forgetting Roger. In this week's edition, we have all the latest from Beacon with Helen and Muhammad. There's some fascinating news and nostalgia from across the Black Country. We have a couple of feature-focused segments this week too. With this week marking International Assistance Dog Day, we learn about a new pilot project in the Black Country, helping to tackle incidents where individuals are unlawfully denied access to premises and services because of their assistance dogs. With thanks to TNF Soundings, we find out about the humble beginnings of guide dogs and learn some fun doggy facts. We have the latest installment of Puppy Academy with trainer Charlotte and her canine companions. Next week will also mark a significant celestial event. The solar eclipse on August 12, 2026 will be a rare and spectacular event for the UK, marking one of the largest solar eclipses in nearly 30 years. With information on safe viewing methods, as it is never safe to look directly at the sun, local viewing events, and tools that may help create an accessible experience of the event, we just need a favourable weather forecast from Mina for the week ahead. You'll have to be nimble-minded, as we also have another challenging number puzzle quiz from Roger and Mina. Local news to start, though, with me, Matthew, Angela, and Peter.
Residents are again welcome to find some free help and support on a range of money, health and safety matters at an open day in the city. Help at the Hub will see a wide variety of local organisations offer free advice and information. The event will take place on Tuesday the 11th of August between 11am and 2pm at The Gathering Space, Wolverhampton Art Gallery, Lichfield Street, WV1 1DU. Help at the Hub has been organised by officers from City of Wolverhampton Council's Public Protection Scams team, who will be handing out free scams awareness and prevention packs. Residents can speak with representatives from Act on Energy, Alzheimer's Society, Environmental Crime, Financial Wellbeing and Health Watch. Officers from COOTH, Public Protection, Rethink, Shared Lives, SWEET, Terrific for Twos, Wolverhampton College and Work Well will also be available. Councillor Kasir Asim, Cabinet Member for Residents Services at City of Wolverhampton Council, said, "Our Help at the Hub events are a great way to bring support and advice directly out to residents, and this time we are pleased to be in the very central location of our wonderful art gallery. By bringing a wide range of organisations together in one place, we can offer people guidance on lots of different topics. This makes it easier for people to access the support they need in one visit. Whether it's health advice, education information, financial support or other concerns, there's help for everyone. Do pop along on the 11th of August for a chat. We'd be happy to see you and help you find the support you need. People do not have to book an appointment, but are asked to please be prepared to wait if the event is busy.
Time now to hop onto the number 9 bus for a couple of miles out of the city centre, where a Public Spaces Protection Order, PSPO, introduced at Bentley Bridge Retail and Leisure Park earlier this year, is already having a positive impact, helping to reduce antisocial behaviour and improve the experience of visitors, businesses and staff. The 3-year PSPO came into force in March and gives police and partners additional powers to tackle behaviour that causes nuisance, alarm, or distress in and around the popular retail and leisure destination. And retailers and customers have welcomed the additional measures, which are helping to create a safer and more welcoming environment for everyone using the site. The order allows police to require groups of 3 or more people to leave the area where there is reason to believe they are causing or are likely to cause antisocial behaviour. It also gives officers powers to request the removal of face coverings where there is no legitimate reason for them to be worn. A number of breaches of the PSPO have been identified since it came into effect. In response, officers have issued warnings and, where those involved have been under the age of 18, carried out home visits with Wolverhampton ASB team to speak directly with families about the consequences of antisocial behaviour and to help prevent further incidents. Where individuals have breached the PSPO on more than one occasion, referrals have been made to diversionary activities, which have so far prevented further issues. Meanwhile, officials have also written to parents of secondary aged children via schools, advising them that the PSPO is in place. Inspector Emma Clark from Wolverhampton Police said, "We know how much shoppers and visitors, as well as businesses, stores and traders, are impacted by those whose behaviour can be antisocial and unacceptable. We do not want people to have to tolerate this, and our teams are regularly patrolling Bentley Bridge, with our local neighbourhood officers speaking to staff as well as members of the public to encourage the reporting of ASB as we act to identify, trace and deal with those involved. Part of our work, alongside our partners, is about talking with young people to educate them around how the PSPO works and what that means for them and potentially their families if they breach it. Officers are also working with Safer Travel colleagues around monitoring and policing bus routes, especially those between Wolverhampton City Centre and Bentley Bridge. And we continue to ask people to let us know about incidents of ASB, either by calling 101 or messaging on live chat on our website." Councillor Obeida Ahmed, the City of Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for Health, Wellbeing and Community, added, "Bentley Bridge is an important destination for shopping and leisure, and it is vital that people feel safe and welcome when they visit. The early signs are very encouraging, and we are pleased that retailers, staff and visitors are seeing the benefits of the PSPO, and the work we are doing in partnership with Safer Travel officers to address any concerns around antisocial behaviour on the number 59 bus route. While the vast majority of young people behave responsibly, we will continue to work closely with police, businesses, and local partners to tackle the minority whose behaviour has a negative impact on others. And where breaches do occur, appropriate action will be taken to help ensure Bentley Bridge remains a safe and enjoyable place for everyone."
And more broadly across the city, Wolverhampton's neighbourhood teams are out on patrols, with communities also being urged to follow public protection orders as the school summer holidays get underway. The police teams work closely with partners like Wolverhampton Council and local schools on joint operations to discourage youngsters from causing antisocial behaviour, ASB. Neighbourhood officers regularly carry out patrols to offer reassurance and deter those people who may have had bad behaviour or any form of criminality on their minds. Inspector Sophie Clement from Wolverhampton Police said, "Antisocial behaviour has a real impact on people and it is just not acceptable. We do not want shoppers, residents, businesses, visitors to have to put up with it. And our officers are regularly patrolling spaces and places we know where we can see ASB. We're also talking to shop staff and members of the public to encourage the reporting of ASB as we do act to identify, trace and deal with those involved. Officers are also working with Safer Travel colleagues around monitoring and policing bus routes, especially between the city centre and Bentley Bridge. Early this month, the city centre team were joined by two mounted officers alongside teachers from St Regis Church of England Academy School in Regis Road, Tetnall, and staff from Travel West Midlands and the Helix Education Hub on a patrol which started at the city's bus station. They spoke with youngsters about the two public space protection orders which cover the city centre and Bentley Bridge. These give officers extra powers to tackle issues as part of the Home Safe initiative aimed at building positive relationships with young people, identifying areas where antisocial behaviour can occur, and encouraging early intervention through partnership working. The public can also report antisocial behaviour either by calling 101 or messaging on the West Midlands Police website.
Up next, we have the Beacon Update, brought to us by Mohammed.
Hey everyone, it's Mo here from Beacon with your latest update. We'll start this week off with a big thank you to everyone who joined us for the Sensory Loss and Domestic Abuse Training Session by Chad, hosted at Beacon on Monday. The session brought together professionals working with people affected with sensory loss, with the aim of building confidence, strengthening understanding, and supporting more inclusive and informed practice. We'd like to say a huge thank you to everyone who attended the event, contributed, and helped make the session such an important and valuable opportunity to learn and share knowledge. We hope everyone who joined us truly found it useful, and we really appreciate you taking the time to be a part of it. Next up, we have a very important message from the North Pole. December is Santa's busiest time of year, and while he's checking his list and getting everything ready for Christmas, he's asked us to find someone very special to represent him at this year's Beacon Santa Run. Could it be you? We're looking for a volunteer with plenty of festive spirit to become Beacon Santa for the morning, helping to welcome runners, pose for photos, and spread some Christmas magic to children and families at West Park in Wolverhampton on Sunday, the 13th of December. If you'd love to help Santa with this very important mission, we'd love to hear from you. White beards are optional, big smiles are essential. For more information, call us on 01902 880111 or email us supporters@beaconvision.org. And please do share this with anyone you think might be perfect for the job and help us to answer Santa's special request. We also wanted to remind you about our August lifestyle newsletter, which featured in last week's Talking News. If you haven't had a chance to read it yet, you can find the latest edition on the Beacon website, along with accessible formats, so there's a way for everyone to enjoy it. We'll include the link on our social media platforms, so please take a look and catch up with everything that's happening at Beacon in our lifestyle newsletter for August. Next, we're asking a very important question this month. What's your legacy? When you hear the word legacy, what comes to mind? For some, it's family. For others, it's kindness, friendships, or making a difference. A legacy isn't just about the future. It's about the impact we have on the people around us every day. Throughout August, we're inviting everyone visiting Beacon to add a leaf to our Leaves That Tell a Story tree on reception. You can complete one of our simple prompts, such as, I hope people remember me for. My greatest legacy is. One thing I'm most proud of. Or, I hope I've made people feel. Together, we will create a beautiful tree celebrating the memories, values, and kindness that connects us all. We'd love you to add your own leaf next time you visit Beacon. Or if you'd prefer, you can email supporters@beaconvision.org or leave a comment on our social media with a legacy you'd like to see on the tree. And finally, we've got an exciting cricket session coming up for children and young people. We're pleased to be welcoming Worcester Cricket Foundation back for another exciting cricket session on Thursday, the 13th of August. It's a great opportunity for young people and children to get involved and try something new, develop their skills, and enjoy cricket in an inclusive and supportive environment. The session is from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. at Beacon Centre. That's it from me for this week. Join us again next week where we'll have even more news and updates right here on the Beacon Update. But until then, I hope you have a great week and goodbye.
Thanks for that update, Mohammed. Next up, we have another block of local news.
The glass pioneers who helped illuminate the globe. The global legacy of a Black Country glassmaker whose products were used in landmarks ranging from the Crystal Palace to Big Ben and the White House is being showcased through a new play. Chance Glassworks, based in Smethwick, not only supplied glass for some of the world's most famous buildings, but also developed lighthouse lenses that lit up the world's coastlines, transforming maritime safety. A mapping project has revealed the scale of the legacy, detailing about 580 sites equipped with chance lenses, with the play turning the spotlight back on the Black Country's history of innovation, industry, and light, and in particular, the story of one engineer. Orlando Stokes was born in 1864 and lived in Smethwick all his life, explained by his great-great-grandson, Scott Jones. Like his father William, Stokes worked at the factory which at its height employed 3,500 workers, making it then the largest glassmaker in the world. He worked in a quite scientific specialist role, Jones said, travelling by ship to countries around the world to install the precious glass, including the use of liquid mercury. The best image I can give is someone a bit like steeplejack Fred Dibner, climbing up the sides of lighthouses. There was no health and safety, no support, and he was risking his life every few months. So he was quite an interesting character, to say the least. Jones describes how relatives told him that Stokes would disappear, leaving his family for months at a time, often returning with exotic gifts. My mother has still got two Oriental prints from about 1920 from one trip, but we have no idea whether he brought them back from some far land or they came back from Southampton Dock, he said. But certainly they would have been exotic for Smethwick at the time, to put them up in the house.
The worker's story has inspired a new family play, Cape Custard, a lighthouse adventure. It is touring the West Midlands over the summer and highlights the company's prominent role in British engineering and technology. Genevieve Say, Artistic Director of Black Country Touring, said the company have been inspired not only by the lenses that were being made there at the time, but also what were the adventures that Orlando must have gone on in those times. The optics were so technologically advanced, the minute details mattered, and so they had to send out their best engineers like William and Orlando Stokes, she said. As well as transforming navigation, which obviously had a huge impact on global trade, what's interesting is the impact it had on local heritage and the community, Say explained. The philanthropic company really felt they were duty-bound to invest in their workforce, so built houses for people, provided pensions, and built a school for their children. For more than a century, the company dominated glassmaking in Britain, from developing the first cathode ray tubes to producing laboratory glass as well as novelty ashtrays. It was said if it was made of glass, chance made it. The family originated in Bromsgrove in Worcestershire before setting up business at the Spon Lane Works in Smethwick. Robert Lucas Chance established the works on the former British Crown Glass Company site in 1824. Later, working with brothers Robert and James, the business was renamed Chance Brothers and Company. Starting in 1850, the company produced 3,000 panes to glaze the Crystal Palace, with their first lighthouse optics exhibited and demonstrated at the Great Exhibition the year after. Other projects included the glazing of the Houses of Parliament and the white glass for the four faces of the Westminster Clock Tower. In 1946, the company opened a plant in Malvern, Worcestershire, producing the world's first interchangeable syringe. But during the company's success, competitor Pilkington Brothers had acquired a 50% shareholding, and by 1952 it had taken control of the company.
The production of flat glass ceased at Smethwick in 1976, with the remainder of the works closing in 1981 and so ending more than 150 years of glass production. The factory was closed for the last time by ex-chief engineer Ray Drury, who said, "I drove my car out, I shut the gate behind me and threw the key in the canal." The factory, comprising of 9 Grade 2 listed structures, has been included on the Victorian Society's list of most endangered buildings after being left derelict. However, funding from the National Lottery Heritage Fund and Historic England is helping to move it forwards with a regeneration project. The Chance Heritage Trust said it was working to restore and protect the buildings, developing the site into a mixed-use urban village, including residential and educational spaces. The project is currently seeking the funding to get spades in the ground, the Trust said. With efforts reaching around the world, the Trust has also produced an interactive map showcasing the lighthouses equipped with Chance lenses. Volunteers conducted detailed research, uncovering photographs, technical details, and historical insights, which were meticulously compiled to bring this unique story to life, it said. "We've got a guy in Russia doing a great job building up the technical data on the lighthouses, who's keen to get the quality of information right. So he's been doing a huge amount of work," said Mark Davis, chair of the Trust. His own journey, tracking information on the company, started at the top of the lighthouse in Cape Lewin Bay, Australia. "I saw one of their lenses for the first time, and I was born about 4 miles away from the factory on the Rowley Hills, and I'd never heard of them. So that's where this whole project started," Davies said. The play will tour small venues including libraries, community centres and village halls across Wolverhampton and the Black Country. "The company was hugely important and had a real lasting legacy on the area," Say explained. Jones added, "It's nice to see that legacy, that my ancestors who were sweating in the factories there and worked their fingers to the bone are still being recognised. Not only the industrial, but the cultural significance of these people is something we can't afford to lose. Cape Custard is suitable for ages 3 and over, and tours various venues until the 20th of August.
Time now for our new numerical puzzle. Follow the clues from Roger and do the math to get the answer without the need to write anything down. Mina will reveal the clues and the all-important answer later in this edition. Best of luck!
Hello again, everyone. I'm ready for this week's number puzzle. So let's start off this week with the number of yards that there are in a mile. Then take away the number of meters in a kilometer. Then divide that by the years of a decade. Add in the years of a golden wedding anniversary. And finally, divide that by the number of like peas in a pod. So you should have the answer for this one. Listen again if you want to, and the answer will be revealed later.
Cheers for those questions. I'll get my mind working on them. Up now, however, is another block of local news. Dudley Council joined new pilot to tackle access refusals for assistance dogs. Dudley Council has signed up to Guide Dogs' new national pilot scheme to tackle the refusal of entry to businesses for people with assistance dogs. The pilot focuses specifically on incidents in licensed premises and services, including pubs and restaurants, shops and hotels, where disabled people are unlawfully denied access because of their assistance dog. Under the Equality Act 2010, businesses and service providers must not discriminate against disabled people. This includes a legal duty to allow access to assistance dogs and not treat their owners less favourably than any other customers. Refusing entry, providing a lower standard of service, or charging extra because of an assistance dog is against the law and could result in enforcement action. Despite this, access refusal remains a widespread issue. According to research conducted by Guide Dogs in 2024, almost 90% of assistance dog owners surveyed said they have experienced an access refusal. By taking part in the pilot, Dudley Council is helping to better understand where and why these refusals happen, and to take action to ensure local services are accessible to everyone. Jessica Luke, Regional Policy and Campaigns Manager at Guide Dogs, said, "Access refusals are debilitating and humiliating. They prevent assistant dog owners from doing things that others take for granted, like going for a meal or getting to work on time. We are pleased to collaborate with Dudley Council to ensure that assistant dog owners are welcomed by local businesses. At the heart of the pilot is a simple reporting system hosted by Guide Dogs that allows participating Assistant Dogs UK member organisations to report when an assistant dog owner is refused access to business or service. The council will receive information such as the type of business, location and what happened. The reports will help Dudley Council to build a clearer picture of where issues are occurring and work directly with businesses and licence holders to improve understanding of the law, using licensing and enforcement powers where appropriate, and support training and awareness to prevent further incidents." Councillor Daniel Bevan, Cabinet Member for Development and Regulation, said, "For people with sight loss, a guide dog is more than a pet. They give back independence and confidence, helping people to navigate the world safely. Being refused entry to a shop or other venue can have a significant impact on a person, not only preventing access to essential services, but also affecting confidence and well-being. By signing up to this pilot, we can help educate and, where necessary, prosecute businesses who breach the Equality Act, where we have sufficient evidence to do so. Nobody should be refused access to a premises or service due to a disability, and we're proud to be working with Guide Dogs to tackle any such issues locally." The pilot forms part of Dudley Council's wider commitment to creating inclusive, accessible communities where all residents can live independently and with dignity. By working with Guide Dogs and encouraging reporting, the council aims to drive real improvements in awareness, compliance and access, ensuring that assistant dog owners are welcomed, not turned away. Residents who have experienced an access refusal with their assistance dog are encouraged to report it to their AD UK member organisation. Vicky Worthington, Executive Director at Assistance Dog UK, said, "We welcome Dudley Council's involvement in this important pilot scheme. Access refusals remain a significant issue for many assistant dog partnerships, and this scheme is a positive step towards improving awareness, promoting compliance with the Equality Act, and ensuring disabled people with assistance dogs can access services with confidence."
And staying with assistance dogs, did you know that this week, the 4th of August, marked International Assistance Dog Day? With thanks to the Talking News Federation, Soundings contributor Lindsay marks this year's event with a lively look at the remarkable dogs who help people live with greater independence, confidence, and freedom. We also hear a brief recap of Guide Dogs' humble beginnings, and we're treated to some sniffed-out fun facts about unusual deployment of natural doggy abilities.
Hello, my name is Lindsay. I started producing topical items during lockdown to keep my neighbours entertained. All the recordings are made inside my cosy cabin for that extra sense of calm. And naturally enough, I called them Cabin Conversations. I hope you enjoy them. Cabin Conversations about International Assistance Dog Day. Unusually, this Awareness Day, the 4th of August, is paired with the original celebratory week, starting the first Sunday in August since 2009. All thanks to American founder Marcy Davis, who continues to sponsor the event, raising awareness via her Working Like Dogs website, radio podcasts, and book of the same name. Marcy is an individual living with paraplegia and a permanent wheelchair user, who became partnered with a mobility assistance dog. Just to clarify, physical dog tasks basically consist of opening and closing doors, including auto buttons and elevators, laundry from washing machines, fetching the phone, helping with undressing and general picking up, and handling of items to the partner. Marcy strives for hard-working dogs and support staff trainers to be recognised for their part in transforming lives of people with disabilities and roles in other welfare assistance jobs. This is particularly important when accessibility is not met by society. In 2025, a UK survey stated 79% of partnered assistance dogs were denied access to a public place. These dogs, with their extraordinary talents, cover such a vast range of support. Visual guidance, hearing, and medical alerts for those with epilepsy and diabetes, etc., right through to autism, PTSD, and depression. Many dogs are remarkably adept at detection work too, in areas of biosecurity, cancer research, emergency services, such as search and rescue, even recovery abroad after natural disasters like earthquakes. The uniformed services use sniffer dogs side by side with personnel for contraband, explosives, criminal tracking, and even now, utility companies are finding water leaks and electrical faults underground, plus surveying buildings for dry rot. One thing these working dogs have is intelligence and the right kind of scenting nose. The top breed choices tend to be Beagle, Belgian Malinois, Border Collie, English Springer Spaniel, German Shepherd, Golden and Labrador Retrievers. Some less common are Hoovervaart, similar to the originator search dog, St. Bernard, and Newfoundland, a particularly large, heavy breed adept at water rescue because they can easily rope tow a dinghy with people on board. In fact, there are around 7,000 registered with Assistant Dogs UK and approximately 3,700 of those are guide dogs. An innovative organisation which began in 1931 with two equally determined ladies, Rosamund Bond and Muriel Crook, who trained the first German shepherds, called Folly, Meta, Judy and Flash, while operating from a garage in Wallasley, Merseyside. Interestingly, four different German shepherd guide dogs, Luthi, Podo, Rita and Aster, were taken by their pioneer owner, John Forbes Gordon, all the way to Japan 7 years later to establish the foundations of that country's Guide Dog Association. Indeed, there is a misconception that all guide dogs today are Labradors and only those with total sight loss are eligible. Whereas in reality, people with several variations of visual impairment qualify, and they still use the go-to German Shepherds, along with Golden Retrievers and Poodles, though mostly crossbred for health, intelligence and temperament reasons. Whatever the breed, they are still a costly investment, around £102,000 to raise, train and support a guide dog partnership from birth to retirement, usually 9 or 10 years of working life. The British politician, Lord David Blunkett, has total sight loss and had 7 guide dog partnerships throughout the years, all helping with accessing his government career and life in general. His latest, Barley, a Black Labrador German Shepherd cross, has even been made an official member of Britain's largest workers' GMB union. Although this is a unique award, The Service Dogs UK charity does shortlist and hand out Assistance Dog Medal of Honour UK awards annually for dogs that have proven exceptional support in the lives of individuals with various disabilities. The winner for 2025 was Okho, the Labrador supporting Chloe Hammond, the only working nurse in Britain to use both a dog and wheelchair. The three runners-up candidate partnerships covered owners with autism and balance issues, POTS fainting episodes, and PTSD. Now for some fun facts about how dogs are adaptable. Did you know that search and rescue dogs can sniff down trails of lost people on land, air scent into the wind in awkward places like mountains, and go on boats to also detect people in the water and at sea? A stalwart, one-eyed dog called Woody, a Red Fox Labrador, performs port duties against biosecurity threats on board boats on Rathlin Island off Northern Ireland, already having rid the island of non-native ferrets, which were introduced in the 1980s and previously decimated the RSPB seabird colonies. Those exceptionally rare truffles used in expensive culinary dishes grow buried beneath specific tree roots and can also be found by dogs in the UK. One company runs a six-week course in Tunbridge Wells, Kent, to make a suitable pet into a truffle-scenting dog. Research chemists have shown that trained sniffer dogs can detect fire accelerants, for example, petrol, in very small amounts, as little as 1/1,000,000th of a teaspoon. No wonder the fire brigade used dogs to detect possible unlawful activity. Finally, although medical alert dogs exist and can screen virus carrier patients in hospitals for certain contagious diseases, there are new efforts to supplement their scenting dogs' basic training to early detect COVID-19. So, could assistance dogs be the answer to some socially impactful situations in the future? May you pause and appreciate whatever support is there in your life.
DNF Soundings.
And continuing our focus on assistance dogs, we join the latest instalment of Puppy Academy, where we follow trainer Charlotte and her doggy trainees who set out on their training to become assistance dogs. In this episode, we meet another buddy dog and cover a fun family day out. Introducing Puppy Academy, Episode 10, Patrick the Gentle Giant and Awareness of Buddy Dog Weight.
DNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
And now here's Charlotte from Guide Dogs.
Hello, this is Charlotte from Guide Dogs, back with another update on our Buddy Dog scheme. This has been a very busy month in Buddy Dogs. Last week we ran an event in Newcastle for families with a buddy dog to get together. It was also an opportunity to invite families along who are considering whether a buddy dog is right for them. We had a range of activities for children and their families, including making dog treats, making a tug toy, and getting to meet a buddy dog in training and practice teaching them a trick. It was wonderful to meet the families with their dogs and hear about the positive impacts that their buddy dogs are having. I had a lot of fun teaching the children how to make the dog toys. For the children that did not have their own dog, I encouraged them to chat to the families also present and offer their toy to them, or to donate it to one of the dogs in training. For the older children present, we had a tech table to demonstrate a braille embosser, screen readers on phones and laptops, liquid level indicators, and a talk with a guide dog owner about assistive technology, which was very popular. We also had a dog health table where we had models of fleas, ticks, and mites, as well as plastic molds of dog's teeth for the children to pick up and examine. The most popular object on this table was the model lump of fat. This is a 2 kilo blob, and we asked the children and their parents to guess how much it weighs. Just like with qualified guide dogs, we are careful to monitor the weights of our placed buddy dogs, and sometimes holding the 2 kilo block of fat can really bring home how much excess it really is for a dog to be carrying. This has also been a successful month for placing buddy dogs, with 2 buddy dogs qualifying with their families in the Southwest. I have also just placed a buddy dog with his potential family for his month-long trial, and this is going really well. The dog's name is Patrick, and he is a large yellow Labrador cross golden retriever. Patrick was deemed unsuitable for the guiding role as he did not like wearing the guiding harness, despite his trainer putting a lot of work into getting him used to it. Aside from this quirk, Patrick is a very easygoing boy. He is quiet, laid back, and walks really nicely on the lead. He is a big boy at 36 kilos, but a real gentle giant. I matched Patrick with an 8-year-old boy with total vision loss, who is also an ambulatory wheelchair user. We did a matching visit where the family came to the office to meet Patrick, and this went brilliantly. Patrick walked very calmly beside the boy's wheelchair, and at the end of the session, Patrick fell asleep with his head on the boy's lap. Patrick has now been living with the family for a week, and I am receiving lots of photos of him on various adventures. The family have reported that their son is much more confident to go out on walks to new places when Patrick is with him, and he is really enjoying having Patrick sleep on the end of his bed. I have a few families waiting to be matched with buddy dogs, but at the moment there aren't many dogs coming out of training for me to assess. This is great for guide dogs on the whole, as it means that we are getting more dogs qualified as guides, but I'm hoping that there will be a few dogs coming my way shortly. As always, thank you for listening, and I will be back soon with more stories from guide dogs.
TNF Soundings.
Up now, we have a special edition of this week's sports feature.
Here's something of special interest if you are a fan of Wolves or West Brom. Well, with the new football season fast approaching, our Talking News service would like to hear from you. In an exciting new development to the weekly football roundup, our Fan Zone feature will give you the opportunity to leave your thoughts, opinions and reaction to all the action from the weekend, making you the stars of the show. So, whether you are part of the Wolves pack, a boing boing baggy, or just a fervent follower of the beautiful game, if you'd like to be one of our prize pundits, then please do get in touch to register your interest. You can call, drop a text message, or leave a WhatsApp voice note with your name and who you support with our Talking News team on 07849 802 703. We can't wait to hear from you. It's going to be truly phenomenal. Now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own Sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, it's Mina here with your forecast for the week ahead. This time we're looking at the weather across the Black Country from Friday 7th of August through to Thursday 13th of August. And this week starts fairly settled, comfortable road before it becomes a little more mixed at times. Friday should be a decent day overall, with a mixture of cloud and some sunny spells. Temperatures look set to reach around 20 to 22 degrees. Winds should stay fairly light and the chance of rain looks low, so it should be a useful day for getting out and about, without needing to check the sky every few minutes, like it owes you money. Sunrise will be around 5:37 a.m. with sunset close to 8:51 p.m. So there's still plenty of evening light, even if the days are quietly starting to shorten. Saturday looks a bit cooler and cloudier with the chance of a few showers around, especially later in the day. It shouldn't be a washout, but it may be one of those days where the sky looks undecided for long stretches. Highs are likely to be around 20 degrees and 21 degrees, so still comfortable enough when the brighter breaks come through. Sunrise on Saturday is around 5:38 a.m. with sunset just before 8:49 p.m. UV levels look moderate for much of the period, but it's still worth remembering the basics if you're outside for a while. Sun cream, a hat and sunglasses are wrap around filter glasses with proper UV protection, particularly whenever the sun breaks through. Sunday should be a little brighter again with some sunny intervals and temperatures around 21 to 23 degrees. A stray shower can't be ruled out, but many places should get away with a mainly dry day. It's probably one of those days where the garden chair comes out with confidence, then gets watched closely like it's about to make a run for it. Sunrise is around 5:40 a.m. with sunset edging back to around 8:47 p.m. Monday looks warmer and brighter with highs perhaps reaching 23 to 25 degrees across parts of the Black Country. There should be a good deal of dry weather around with sunny spells developing at times, so it might feel one of the better days of the week if you like your summer weather warm but not too fierce. Tuesday 12th of August brings something a bit special as well. A deep partial solar eclipse will be visual across the West Midlands, including the Black Country. The day should stay fairly warm with temperatures around 24 to 26 degrees. The forecast of warm weather with a mix of cloud and brightness means there should be at least some chance of experiencing the eclipse if the cloud breaks at the right time. Though, as ever, the Black Country sky may decide to keep a bit of drama for itself. For all things solar eclipse, please do listen out for a focus in this week's edition of the Talking News, which includes information on safe viewing methods, as it is never safe to look directly at the sun, local viewing events and tools that may help create an accessible experience of the event. Wednesday looks like it could remain on the warm side, with some sunny spells and highs possibly around the mid-20s. By Thursday, things may turn a touch fresher and more changeable, with more cloud around, a chance of patchy rain or showers, with temperatures nearer 19 to 22 degrees. By Thursday, sunrise will be around 5:49 a.m., with sunset close to 8:38 p.m., so the light evenings are still with us, but they are definitely slipping away bit by bit. So overall, it's generally usable August week, some dry and bright spells, temperatures often in the low to mid-20s, and just enough shower risk to remind us that this is still the West Midlands and not the coastal Black Country. In true Black Country fashion, it may be the sort of week where the weather changes its mind quicker than somebody deciding whether they're having chips or a cob for tea. So enjoy the bright bits when they arrive and don't take the clouds personally. Enjoy the weather.
Next up, we have another block of local news. On Wednesday the 12th of August 2026, a partial solar eclipse will be visible across the UK. It's a rare and exciting event that many people will be keen to watch, but looking directly at the sun without the right protection can cause permanent damage to your eyesight. Here's how to enjoy the eclipse safely. Where can I see the eclipse? The solar eclipse will be visible across the whole of the UK. People watching in the southwest are likely to see the greatest proportion of the sun covered by the moon. According to the Royal Museum's Greenwich, this will be the most coverage seen from the UK and Ireland since the 1999 solar eclipse, which was total from most of Cornwall and Devon, making it a genuinely special occasion. The eclipse takes place in August, so there's a better chance of clear skies than you'd expect in autumn or winter. That said, you still need to take precautions even if it's cloudy. Cloud cover does not make it safe to look at the sun. Why is watching a solar eclipse risky? During an eclipse, the sun appears dimmer than usual. This makes it easier to look at directly, and that's precisely the problem. The reduced brightness can override the body's natural reflex to look away, allowing intense sunlight to reach and damage the retina. This damage happens without causing any pain, so you may not realise harm is occurring until it's too late. Following the 1999 total solar eclipse, the Royal College of Ophthalmologists reported about 70 cases of people experiencing vision problems after watching the eclipse. Around 40% had looked at it for less than a minute. Even with existing sight loss, the UK Health Security Agency warns that looking directly at the sun during this eclipse remains dangerous, as the invisible radiation is still strong enough to cause permanent, painless burns to any remaining retinal tissue. Can I just wear sunglasses? Ordinary sunglasses, no matter how dark, do not provide adequate protection for viewing a solar eclipse. They reduce glare, making it feel more comfortable to look at the sun for longer, while still allowing harmful solar radiation to reach the retina. Never use regular sunglasses to look at the sun during an eclipse. How can I watch the eclipse safely? There are two safe approaches, specialist eclipse viewers or indirect viewing methods. If you want to use eclipse glasses or handheld solar viewers, make sure they are genuine eclipse glasses with specially designed filters that meet the international safety standard ISO 12312-2:2015 brackets E. Genuine eclipse glasses are available from reputable retailers, including Royal Museums Greenwich. Be cautious of products sold online that may not meet this requirement. If you're unsure whether a product is certified, don't use it. Don't use eclipse glasses if the lenses are scratched, torn, or damaged. Alternatively, you can watch the eclipse indirectly without any specialist equipment at all. Safe options include a pinhole viewer, which you can easily make at home. Viewing the sun's image projected through a colander or the gaps between tree leaves. Projecting the sun's image onto a sheet of paper using a simple pinhole projector. And remember, a celestial event of this nature is more than vision alone. A solar eclipse is often described as something you watch, but that's only part of the experience. NASA's Eclipse Soundscapes work is a useful reminder that eclipses can be observed in a multi-sensory way. Changes in ambient sound, temperature, wind, crowd reaction, and animal behaviour can all become part of the event. That matters for blind and low vision participants, but it also enriches the experience for everyone. When the light changes rapidly during totality, birds may become quiet, insects may shift behaviour, and the atmosphere around you can feel suddenly different. Those are not consolation prizes, they are real observations. So, whichever method you choose, make sure you follow guidance carefully. The Royal Astronomical Society has published detailed practical advice on all of these approaches.
Notable West Midlands public astronomy events. For the Black Country, the biggest public in-person hub with direct guided assistance is the Birmingham Astronomical Society's official event at Aston Hall from 6 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. Resident astronomers will be guiding the crowd through the atmosphere, offering continuous commentary. If the weather is poor, the event will move inside to broadcast a live stream feed from the Great Hall. Slightly further afield, and another event is scheduled to be held within Coventry City Centre, held by the Coventry and Warwickshire Astronomical Society at Broadgate Square near the Lady Godiva statue. This urban location is flat, highly accessible, and features experienced astronomers who will talk through the changes in the sky as they happen. What we will sense in the Black Country. The eclipse timeline follows these distinct phases. 6:15 p.m, the start. The moon begins its pass. Ambient light will initially seem normal. 7:11 p.m, the peak. This is the maximum point of coverage, reaching 91.7% depth. The temperature will noticeably dip over a matter of minutes. Birdsong will change as local wildlife gets confused by the sudden drop in daylight, mimicking an artificial twilight. 8:05 p.m, the conclusion. The eclipse finishes, blending directly into the natural Black Country summer sunset.
Accessing audio tools individually. If you prefer to stay home or sit in a local park, you can access tactile features and real-time audio feeds using accessible tools that are fully active in the UK. Ensure your phone's location services are turned on so the app can seamlessly trigger its narrative audio descriptions and haptic rumble maps exactly as the shadow hits the Black Country at 6:15 p.m. The app. The Eclipse app. You can download the Eclipse app on the Google Play Store or the Apple Store. It is completely free, does not require an account, and is fully updated for the 2026 European eclipse. Features. It includes a built-in spoken audio guide that serves as a hands-free countdown and real-time narrator for your exact coordinates in the Black Country. Accessibility. It fully supports Apple and Android TalkBack screen readers. Access the soundscape's rumble map via web browser. If you want specific tactile haptic feedback, the NASA Soundscapes project coordinators, Arisa Lab, provide accessible browser-based alternatives. You can open the official Eclipse Soundscapes project website directly through Google Chrome on your Android phone or the Safari browser on your Apple device. Their online web tool simulates the audio descriptions and haptic feedback maps directly through your mobile browser without needing an app installation. Real-time audio alternative, Royal Observatory Greenwich. If you want a pure, beautifully descriptive vocal breakdown without dealing with apps at all, you can stream the Royal Observatory Greenwich eclipse feed directly from your phone's internet browser or the YouTube app. The astronomers will narrate the entire event live, starting at 6:10 p.m. BST on the evening of the eclipse.
Now, here come the quiz
answers,
and they're brought to us by Mina.
Hello, Puzzle Pals, and welcome to the grand reveal of another number puzzle challenge. Feeling confident? Are the numbers still a little dance in your head? Have you cracked it, or did the puzzle give you the runaround? Right then, let's put on our number hats and see what happened. We start this week's puzzle with a proper distance dazzler. How many yards are there in a mile? The answer is 1,760. A mile might sound simple, but it has a bit of history tucked in its pockets. The English mile in law was fixed at 8 furlongs, which gives us 5,280 feet, or 1,760 yards. Next, Roger threw in a metric twist and asked us to take away the number of metres in a kilometre. That's 1,000, so 1,760 minus 1,000 gives us 760. And here's a handy nugget. Kilometre literally means 1,000 metres. Kilo meaning thousand. Very neat, very tidy, very metric. Then it was time to divide by the number of years in a decade. A decade is 10 years, so 760 divided by 10 brings us neatly to 76. The word decade comes from the Greek word dega, meaning a group of 10. So the answer was hiding in plain sight like a cheeky little clue. After that, Roger added a sparkle of celebration and asked us to add the years in a golden wedding anniversary. That's 50 years, so 76 plus 50 gives us 126. Gold is all about something precious and lasting, so it's a pretty perfect symbol for 50 years of marriage, and it adds a nice bit of shine to our puzzle too. Finally, we had to divide by the number in the saying, like peas in a pod, and unless you've got a very crowded pod, that number is of course 2. So, 126 divided by 2 equals, ta-da, 63. And there we have it, 63 is this week's magic number. So, how did you do? Did you glide through it like a mathematician, or did it freeze your brain? If it caught you out, don't worry. We'll be back next week with another puzzle to give your brain a friendly workout. Bye for now and keep puzzling.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. Thank you for listening. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!